meetings or anything.
We'll call our meeting to order. Good morning, everyone, on this rainy Monday morning. We're glad you're here. We'll open our meeting as we always do. This is a workshop, of course, and we will be taking public comment both in the beginning and the end. And we'll start now. I understand that Mr. Couples is here and has some thoughts he wants to share with us, so we'll start with him, and then anyone else who wishes to speak is welcome to immediately following. So, Gary, if you would state your name for the record.
Okay, for the record, my name is Gary Couples. I'm a registered professional land surveyor as well as a professional planner. And I'm here this morning, usually I'm used to saying this evening, talk about development zones or development districts that has worked well in other jurisdictions. And many of you are brand new to the Planning Commission. I was the former president of ECI. We did a large percentage of the land development, residential and commercial, in Sussex County. I've been practicing in Sussex County for the last 17 years. I have about 60 years of experience in land surveying, if you count the time I spent with my pop. I started when I was 10, I'm 70 now. Realistically, I have about 40 years. It's always been a great profession, and I've enjoyed it. I've sat in the very same seat that you folks are sitting, and I've also sat as on a council. So I feel like I'm entering the dark side here. In other jurisdictions, well, one that comes to mind is Jacksonville, Florida. What Jacksonville, Florida does is they open districts or zones to land development, and they don't do it willy-nilly. And the reason I'm here today is you folks are in the midst of putting together a comprehensive plan for the growth of this county, hopefully for the next 10 years or so. And I think it's important to recognize what's really going on. That said, when you approach any land development project, whether it be commercial or residential, there's really four things that you look for before you sign the dotted line and agree to buy a piece of property. Number one is the transportation, the road network. Number two is there water to service the project? Number three, which is really a big one, it's almost as important as transportation, is sewage, particularly here in Sussex County. And the new kid on the block is stormwater management. If you're missing any of those four components, chances are you're going to walk from the project. You're not going to do it. And when you look at how Sussex County has grown, and it's grown in some areas where perhaps growth shouldn't have happened because of one reason or the other, because of transportation or because of sewage or because of water supply, you have included water supply. Looking at it geographically, if you could almost say that the majority of the development in Sussex County is pretty much focused from Milton south over to 113 in Millsboro, where I live, down to the beaches on the east side, and down to the Delaware state line. The current transportation network that you have, the main arterial roads, Route 1, Route 24, Route 9, Route 113, and Route 13 over in the Seaford area. Those are the areas. You could say 404, but 404 and 9 are pretty much synonymous. So you say, well, wait till this Thursday night. or Friday morning, we're coming up on a Memorial Day weekend, would any of you be planning on going anywhere this weekend? I'm not. Not unless I do it by boat. Not going to happen. Route 1's going to back up forever. 24's already a disaster and has been for some time. The same goes with the other roads. So those are that's what you have to deal with. DelDOT, when they permit a development, oftentimes enacts or initiates user fees or impact fees. I know of no case where those impact fees have been used along the roadways that the development occurs on. And that's not a criticism of DelDOT, but my fear is that somehow or another it finds itself into the general fund or it finds its way up north. What's the main attraction? What's everybody want? What do they come here for? They come because they want to go to the beaches. The beaches is number one. Perhaps number two is the outlets. You have people here that are experts that may have better ideas than I do. Well, Saturday morning, let's all get in our cars and try to get into Rehoboth. Rehoboth is getting to be like Disney World. They probably should start charging to admission. The same with all our Delaware beaches. State Parks picks up a certain amount of money. But the majority of the people want to go to Rehoboth, they want to go to Dewey, they want to go to Bethany, they want to go to Fenwick. That's the attraction. That's always going to be the attraction. No matter what we do, if you build 12-lane highways into Rehoboth, you reach a capacity. You get into a capacity limit. The town can only absorb so many visitors. But that's the attraction. That's it. Or if it's a rainy day, go to the outlets. If you look at the park system, we have the Cape Penelope State Park, we have the Indian River State Park, and we have the one down in the Fenwick area. They draw a large amount of traffic themselves, but the majority of it still is the towns. And now we're going to get to the punchline. We pretty well know that you're not with your current zoning, and I'm not an advocate of zoning, to tell you the truth. I believe that if you own a piece of dirt, you should be able to do with it what you want to do, but that's another discussion. You could establish development areas to encourage growth in areas that are not going to be impacted by the big four, by the transportation network, by the water, by the sewage, and by stormwater. You have an engineering staff that can very easily ascertain where the development should be. Under the current zoning, you don't have to change any zoning. You just have to look at the physical attributes of the ground. Will it support a sewage system? Will it provide a water system? Will it impact, which it's going to impact the road network? What can be done to mitigate that? That's what you have an engineering group here for. You have very talented people. You have a planning group that can understand that. What you need to do is incentivize development zones or districts. And by that I said, if you can look at, like for example, on the west side of 113, not an awful lot goes on there. What does go on is centered around Millsboro. But once you leave Millsboro, it's all wilderness till you get to Seaford. And there's a lot of developable ground there. One of the problems inherent to that area is the soils are horrible. The drainage is horrible. But if you filter through that and you say, well, okay, we're going to establish a development zone between Millsboro and Seaford, along 20 or along 24, pick one of the roads, and your engineering staff looks at it and says, yes, that area will support growth, why wouldn't you want to direct it there and incentivize it? You have to change the zoning. You have PRDs. We've all done those. But not everybody can afford that. I was going to Home Depot yesterday. I came up along Beaver Dam Road, and the home stars say, starting at $200,000. Well, that means it's $299,000. Or starting at $300,000. Well, that means $399,000. Not everybody can afford that. The people that are moving down here from the Philadelphia, from the Baltimore area, from New York or New Jersey, they can because they made a lot of money on the house that they had over up there. So they come down here and it's a bargain for them. But for the people that are native to Sussex County, a $400,000 or a $300,000 or a $200,000 home, that would be a real tough bite for them. They're not making the kind of money to support a mortgage on those kind of properties. So if you go on the other side of 113 and you've identified a development area and you incentivize the developer to build in those areas, you say, we're going to open this area here, and here's the incentives. If you put in a sewage treatment plant, we'll give you more density. If you put in a public water system, we'll give you more density. Stormwater management, they're going to have to look at that. The transportation, you folks don't have an awful lot. You don't have a vote. That's really going to be centered up in Dover. But if you incentivize that, now, when you look at soils, and I think that's going to be the big one here, because water doesn't seem to be a problem other than nitrates. Sewage is a problem. We have areas with very high water tables, and on lot systems, for example, with 3/4 acre lot sizes, which is the ag zoning, in many instances, you might be able to put in one treatment area and meet the isolation distance from your well, which is 100 feet. If that system malfunctions, you might find it very difficult to find a location on that lot that can meet those required isolation distances. And nobody wants to drink sewage. So it might very well be because of the soil characteristics that looking for a replacement system that you might have to go to an acre lot. You might have to go to an acre and a half. You really need to consider that into the future, because the worst thing that can happen, and I have seen it, is the whole development. Every one of the properties malfunction. Well, Oak Orchard's a good example of that. I'm working on a project in Pennsylvania right now that there's lakefront development and there's 50 homes. Out of those 50 homes, 49 of them are malfunctioning, the systems. So I think you have to temper what you do as far as development by looking at the soils, and you have the staff to do that. So when do you close down a development zone? You can monitor that. You can look at traffic studies and say, well, maybe this area is filled up. We're going to move that area to somewhere else. Do it. You're not affecting the property rights. You're not affecting the zoning. What you're doing is simply adding a component of common sense. If you don't have the physical attributes to develop the property, then you don't have a project. You got to come to realizing that. But I think you have to understand just what the dynamics are in the building industry. And I can just tell you what a number of very large developers have told me. As recently as 10 years ago, they made money on the land when they developed it. They're not doing that now. They're making money on the construction. Before, they were making money on the land as well as the construction. It's not happening anymore. The next thing is, well, if we open a development district, do we build the infrastructure? And I would emphasize say, hell no, you don't do that. That's what Georgetown did. Georgetown thought that if they build it, they'll come, as did a bunch of other municipalities that I can think of. You don't build those systems. Get the developer to build those systems. If you're going to do a central system, you're going to incentivize him to build a central system, then it's built. You can't take taxpayers' money and fund development. Nobody wants that. But by opening development areas or districts, you can control the growth. You can incentivize it, and you could have projects that are a lot better today than what they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. You have a benchmark right now of what good development is, and you really have the capability to move forward and look at the growth issues from a physical, you can put your finger on it. None of the la-di-da that goes along with planning. Oftentimes people think planning, traffic engineering, and stormwater is voodoo. The reality of it, probably some of it is. But this is real. You can truly identify all of those physical attributes. And once you do that, you can focus your development there. See, it'll work anywhere. And it has. That's my dog and pony show. I'm certainly entertain any questions.
All right, sir. Well, we appreciate your comments. All right, yeah, you can be next.
I know you're tired of seeing me.
Not at all.
I am Nancy Feichtel, and I am with ITN Southern Delaware, and that ITN means Independent Transportation Network. And I'm glad to have with me today the founder of the, Catherine Troy, if you would stand up. She founded ITN, and it's in 23 states or so, and it's been in business over two decades, and we're an affiliate of ITN. So if you're a member here, you can use accounts in Florida and places like that. Mm-hmm. We're very proud to be be into ITN. And here is why we are in ITN. I have been a lifelong resident here, and I have noticed the demographics. And I don't have to repeat to most of you, you know the demographics. You know that of a county that is now only 230,000 people, that 80,000 of them are now 65 and above, and in that group, 12,000 to 15,000 are 85 and above. And most of them that live here, that are elderly and want to age in place, do not have their children here. They've moved here as a second home, and they therefore don't have people to take them around to places. I got looking, and I did it selfishly. I started it up because I'm a lifelong resident here. I took my mom and dad where they wanted to go. I was a school principal, and I could leave school and take them somewhere. And they both lived till 90, but that was wonderful. And then I got thinking, what am I going to do? My son lives in San Francisco, and my daughter lives in Annapolis. Who's going to carry me? So I researched and got affiliated with ITN Southern Delaware. ITN Southern Delaware, for any of you who don't know it, a lot of our members are right here. If you don't know it, it is a transportation cooperative. You join as a member. You have to be 55 or above, or you have to be an adult visually impaired person. We don't take children, but if you're visually impaired, you may take you may do our rides. All our rides are volunteer rides. The drivers bank their miles for when they can't drive. We have been really on the road for just a little more than a year. We've already racked up 2,853 trips. We want to sort of quadruple that. Getting membership in some places is very difficult. We're mainly now in the beach area. And we have been invited into Milford, so we're going to launch in Milford. We're having a hard time getting a critical mass of people in the Georgetown area. Then we're trying to eventually cover all of Sussex. Our big dream is within a decade, we will be carrying about 22,000 trips a year. We will take you anywhere 24/7. It is $1.25 a mile, and I have a cute story. I have a cute story of a man who joined, and he lives in Fenwick Island, and he decided he would go out one night to dinner, and he wasn't going to use our service because he called Uber. He didn't understand surge charges, time charges, and things like that. So to take him to dinner, it cost $7. He couldn't walk very well. He only lived two blocks from the restaurant, $7. And then he called later at night after he'd been sitting at the bar and everything to get the Uber to take him home. The trip home was $37. We explain to people we charge by the mile, not by the meter. We will take you anywhere 24/7, and we are having businesses join us. For example, today we are privileged to be able to go to BB Hospital, who is seed funding a program called Healthy Miles, where we will start with 35 physicians' offices, that they will give enough money that the offices become affiliates of ITN, and they subsidize the ride costs for their patients. We have hairdressers and, Gerald Hocker in Ocean View is starting a Rides to Shop, where if you're a member of ITN, you shop at his store, your ride to his store is free, and all that kind of thing. Now, why am I here today? We have worked hard on this project. It's an ambitious project. We want it to work, and you'll want it to work. As we're starting out, for the first 5 years, we're allowed to get grants and funding, and that's the only way we can operate until we have spread out. We will, in 5 years, be totally self-sufficient. We have to applaud. I was hoping Jennifer Cohan would be here today so that I could grovel at her feet for the fact that when the Longwood Foundation, we had to have $150,000 raised to even begin to affiliate so that we wouldn't go under, you know, that we had enough money to operate. I had raised $58,000 by coming to, I've never been to so many Lions Clubs and chapters of associations for widowed persons and Parkinson's outreach groups. We had raised $58,000 from there. Longwood in 2015 said, we will give you $50,000 if you match it in 4 weeks and you can't use any of your old money. And I was the only player then. And Jennifer Cohan, with state money, which they never do, said we will match it with a 50 because we think it's valuable. But we need operational money as time goes on. We need you to tell people in your districts to get the word out. And I will tell you what I'm working on now. I'm working on the developers. I've met with a couple of developers and said to them, get me into your communities. Let us set up an entire transportation system in your communities. It's dignified, arm through arm, door through door, personalized service. We will take you anywhere. We'll even take you to take your dog to the vet. And then somebody will pick you up when the thing is over. Doctors love us because we not only do the doctor's office call and remind you that you have an appointment, but we call and tell you which driver's picking you up, what they're riding in, arm through arm, door through door. They'll help you bring your groceries in and everything. Please spread the word. Please also, when I come before the council, the county council, for a few dollars, I want more than a few dollars, okay, but that keep us supported so that we know we can do this. We can be one of the biggest forces in solving your transportation problems there is. And also I want you to realize, maybe my members of the audience don't know this, but Delaware, the Public Safety Commission, ranked Delaware fourth in the nation for fatal accidents caused by senior drivers. And what we are now finding, if many people who really shouldn't be driving understand that they have a ride service anytime they want to go, and that they're spending close to $9,000 a year maintaining a car, they give up driving, and it's safer for everyone. Also, I just want you to know that everyone in this association is vetted and trained as a driver and that kind of thing. So please help us get the word out. Please help us keep us financially viable so that we can grow. But I promise you, we will solve a big portion of the problem. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. All right, who'd like to be next? Yes, ma'am. Come on up.
Could you stay up there a minute?
Okay, Barbara. Are we going to do a dance?
Yes.
Okay.
No dancing.
I don't have a cane. I can't dance.
Good morning. My name is Barbara Vaughn, and this timing is incredible because I was a little late to hear her talk. I wanted to talk about something that Ken Bach came up with a few years ago. Is anybody familiar with the consortium concept that he came up with? Why don't we reactivate that? Because Route 9 is a...
Ms. Vaughn, you might briefly want to say what that was,
I'm going to get to that. But Route 9 is the route that... the buses use, but a lot of people live far away from Route 9. If they don't have a car and a bicycle, how do they get to Route 9 to get on a bus to come to work? The places for employment seem to be closer to the beaches. So there are a lot of people that are economically struggling, trying to raise families in areas where there is no bus service. Well, Ken Bach came up with this idea that the Cheer Center has buses. Of course, DelDOT has buses. The Greater Lewis Community Village, another service area for older people. We have as a member, you can have a ride to almost any place. And then along came this brilliant idea of Nancy's for the ITN. So there's a bunch of organizations that if there was a clearinghouse for rides that would facilitate people getting to work in a fashion that would not be very expensive, I think we could solve a lot of problems, and I think her points were very powerful. So I would like to urge you to re-engage with Mr. Bach, who is now the head of all the cheer centers, and Drew is here to, I think, recall that effort on Mr. Bach's point. So I just wanted to bolster what she had to say.
And I'm going to re-bolster what you said, because I didn't know what you were. This is not planned. Okay. Ken Bach loved our idea so much that he gave us a free office in a cheer center that is in Milton. And he said, I said, well, we're not competition. He said, no, we're not competition. We're all in this together. And when we went to the opening of the new transit center, we were already having conversations with Jennifer Cohan that now that the transit center is going to run buses every half hour to Rehoboth and to Dewey and to all the way to Ocean City and back and that kind of thing, that we will buy books of tickets and we will set up people to catch the bus at the transit center by taking them from, you know, from their home to the transit center. So we're working together to try to solve a lot of people who need to go to work and things like that and can use the transit center.
I know that you're familiar with a lot of data, but the one that caught my eye was the projection by the Department of Health and Social Service that by 2030, which isn't that far away, there's going to be an 80% increase in the residents in Sussex County over 80. Now, I'm over 80, and I haven't lost my ability to drive, but I know that that day is going to come. And I'm a very active and independent person, and losing my ability to be out and about will be very hard on me. So I'm just saying that I'm not alone. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to say those same words. So thank you very much.
Thank you
both. Okay. All right. Yes, sir. Hand up in the aisle there. Okay. That would be you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Jeff Stone, resident of Milton, and representing Sussex Alliance for Responsible Growth. Before I get into the prepared remarks for just a second, I wanted to reference what Gary was talking about, development districts and so on. And this is just the kind of thing that I think you need to have a real discussion about, is how these different things, whether it's a development district or an APFO or permit metering or any kind of development regulation, which I'm going to get into a little bit more here, and which Sarge will get into in the coming weeks for more discussion with you. Again, thank you for the opportunity to address you once again. As it's not news that Sussex County residents and visitors are demanding that Sussex County better manage growth and its impacts, especially traffic. We're all here today to review and discuss the mobility element of the 2018 comprehensive plan. In anticipation that the county will better manage its growth and reduce the seemingly ever-growing traffic congestion. But as we all know, the lofty phrases that will be in this element and others are basically empty words unless Sussex County decides to step up and take charge of its future, not continue to defer to others and deflect responsibility for what has happened over the past 10 years and even longer. Sarge has called for Planning and Zoning Commission to assess the elements of the 2008 plan to determine what was successful and what was not before writing the new document. We again emphasize the need to do so. Regrettably, the mobility element of the 2008 comprehensive plan is the easiest to assess, as it accomplished very little to prevent the traffic congestion we see today or improve the mobility of county residents and visitors. The fact is that the only mobility element achievements reported to the Governor's Advisory Council on Planning over the past 9 years were contained in the 2012 report, and all but one were state projects. They were construction of the Indian River Inlet Bridge, the rebuilding of projects on 26 and 54, the lengthening of the runway at the county airport, and the new just dedicated Lewis Travel Center. Only the Indian River Bridge was actually in the plan. Since that report in 2012, the county has not included a single mention of the mobility element in its annual reports to the state. None of the other 60 plus actions outlined in the plan were reported to the state as being accomplished or even underway. A sad record for a county with severe traffic issues. For years, residents have been told by Sussex County there is nothing they can do about roads and traffic. Delta is responsible. This is repeated despite the fact that Delaware law is unequivocal that all land use decisions from zoning to road levels of service are the sole responsibility of the local governing body. DLDOT plays a crucial but advisory role in having the final say, but the final say as to what levels of service and the approval of what development may take place on roads in the unincorporated areas of the county belongs solely to the county government. Last December, the Delaware Supreme Court upheld a March 2016 Superior Court decision in Golf Course Associates versus Newcastle County that reaffirmed that counties have the authority to set development regulations, including traffic standards, by clearly stating, quote, the court finds that state law, as well as judicial precedent, vests the county with final authority to decide whether traffic issues warrant denial of a land use permit. Please note the specificity of the court statement regarding traffic. And while this case regarded a development in Newcastle County, the decision has statewide application. The County Council has long known it has this authority. The mobility element of the 2008 comprehensive plan states Sussex County Council is responsible for all land use decisions in the unincorporated areas of the county. What is left unsaid is that includes the levels of service, how freely traffic flows on public roads and highways. The council simply has chosen to let someone else do it to the detriment of the residents' quality of life. That must change. Letters to the editors go back to the 1990s expressing concerns about traffic, and those concerns grow greater by the day. Can't be ignored. At all of last fall's planning and zoning and listening sessions, residents countywide from north, south, east, west raised their concerns about traffic loud and clear. Full 68% indicated in their comments on various plan elements that transportation and the lack of infrastructure are their number one concerns. 25% transportation, 23% land use, 20% land conservation. These plan elements are inextricably linked and cannot be properly considered individually. It is unacceptable now, as it was 30 years ago, for Sussex County officials to point their fingers at DLDOT to set the county's road level of service and development standards, particularly when DLDOT standards over the past three decades have resulted in the congestion and dysfunction we experience every day. Frankly, however, it's not about DLDOT or other state agencies. It's all about Sussex County government. It is Sussex County's land use and growth management policies and regulations that determine the residents' quality of life and the county's attractiveness to business and visitors. You cannot separate land use policy from transportation policy. Land use drives transportation. The county has the authority and the legal power to manage growth. What is lacking is the will to adopt wide-ranging development regulations that would address the ability of the existing infrastructure to handle more development and require the necessary improvements. The 2008 mobility element says, quote, land use decisions made without understanding their full impact of the transportation system can lead to costly unintended consequences, unquote. County government clearly understands the linkages between land use and transportation, yet refuses to take substantive action to remedy the situation. Why? Why has the county consistently refused to utilize their authority for implementing land use and level of service regulations to mitigate the negative impacts of growth? Linking land use and transportation plans is the norm in most jurisdictions in the country, not to mention the state and the municipalities in the county. Sussex County must not continue to be an exception to this standard practice. It is virtually impossible to go back and fix what has been poorly planned is now broken. Unfortunately, there are too many examples of this across Sussex County today, but going forward, Sussex County must begin managing development for the betterment of all the county's residents. The place to begin is with a strong, thoughtful, comprehensive plan, focused like a laser on outcomes and impacts. Providentially, we've arrived at this critical point with a Planning and Zoning Commission that has a clean slate. With four new members not involved with the writing of the 2008 plan, no disrespect to the chairman, this commission has the opportunity to be truly forward-thinking in planning the county's future, not caught up in defending the past. The 2018 plan must recommend strong, rational development standards, including traffic mitigation and control measures, to be applied to new development and incorporate them not just in the mobility element, but in the conservation and land use elements as well. And then, unlike the 2008 plan, the County Council must enact the necessary ordinances and enforce them. New development can and should happen, but only if it enhances our residents' quality of life, mobility, and safety, not detract from it. The residents of the county deserve nothing less and must start here today. Thank you for the opportunity to again present our views.
All right, sir, we thank you. Anyone else like to speak? Yes, sir. With the book, oh, yeah. There you go.
To a large extent, I'm going to echo what two speakers before me had to say.
First thing we need you to do is give us your name.
Introduce myself.
Yeah, please.
Sure. I'm Bob Billmeyer. I live in the Oyster Rock area, off of Route 1 in Milton. And I'm adjusting to cataract surgery here. I have to put the glasses on and off at the opposite times from normal. We've all been on expressways where there's a clear path that, say, Route 70 heading up to the Pennsylvania Turnpike. You drive along, everything is fine, and then you reach an area where you're dumped into a town for some reason. And it's very difficult to get through. It seems to be, in most cases, it's some small town that wants the commerce, or maybe it's the cost of going around it. But at any rate, here in with Rehoboth and Route 1 situation, we're heading, we're already there, to something much worse than that. And we're not being helped too much by the corridor capacity program, which is bringing people down here more and more rapidly and dumping them at Five Points. So Route 1 can't be everything to everyone. It's a road that travels along the coast, and it's been fine for decades for serving the resorts there and the people who are interested in going there. But it can't be the main path for so many different uses that it now has. So that's a huge problem. And what we need to develop is very clear directional on where we want to go. And it's a multidisciplinary thing, as the first speaker was saying. You need to look at the uses of the properties and such. And a lot of our experience, I was in the OTC coalition. What happened with the OTC and DelDOT indicated that we can't really depend on DelDOT to be the service that tells us where to build, where not to build, or what sort of roads to provide. DelDOT has many other conflicting interests that make that very difficult for them. As far as the corridor capacity program in DelDOT goes, they enforce what they wish to enforce and not other things. The CCP requires access roads to be put in when you're also putting in these overpasses and all that. DelDOT doesn't do that. And they made it clear to us that what they wait for are fatalities at intersections. So, and part of that is trying to avert the cost of doing things properly and in compliance. So an example of the OTC, the amount of money that was being contributed by the developer was inadequate to provide the level of service that should be provided on the road that is attempting to serve so many customers. The resort traffic, the commuting traffic, the shopping center traffic. The shopping center alone would have doubled the traffic on the road. And yet DLDOT didn't pursue the clause in their direction to get adequate funds from the contractor to provide, in one case, additional lanes on Route 1. And they eventually were recommending a plan for the roadways and all that was actually developed by the contractor and which had no clear division between what was county, state roads and what was a shopping center. They were trying to minimize the use of real estate. They approved inadequate traffic studies. The traffic study for the OTC didn't even include 5 points, which is ridiculous. So, as Jeff was just saying, there's no reason that everything has to be Class D roads. And if you want to have Route 1 or some other road serve a heavy traffic and high importance need, you need to elevate the level of service above a Class D. There's no reason that can't be done. That's been covered already. I think what is really needed, not only a clear direction, what we have now, looking at the 08 plan, there's really no clear direction at all. It has very good concepts and goals, but there's not a direction that is specific enough. And any service that is employed to help achieve your goals, you have to give extremely clear direction. And I think the only way that can be done is to develop a multi-discipline plan for the area. And I think it's important to do that. I don't think it's something, in spite of the suggestions that were made that can be done internally here in the county, I think the county has been in a better position to review recommendations on something of that complexity and scope. So I would recommend hiring a company which provides these services normally and going into that level of detail. I don't think I haven't seen that to date in the work that's been provided. And I recommend that either perhaps even the scope of work for the company already serving you could be expanded to include that. But I think we need a greater level of detail than we currently have.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, who's next? Yes, sir. We'll make it back.
Good morning. My name is George Ward, and I'm here to reiterate some of what some of the previous speakers have said.
Okay.
The council and the zoning people have authorized development after development after development, and more developers keep coming to you to ask for permission to add more and more development. But you have so many lots that have already been approved, but homes have not been built on. If you go down 9404 toward Five Points, you see so many lots that are in the process of being developed. I live off of Hudson Road. Hudson Road is a farm road, basically, from years ago, and yet there are now six developments that front on or open up onto Hudson Road. Most of them are not totally developed. The one I live in, River Rock Run, has an authorized about 180 homes. About half of those have been constructed. If there was a moratorium on additional developments, houses would still be built, the transfer taxes would still be being paid, and more traffic would still be dumping on to the county roads. I would encourage you all to take all of that into consideration before you authorize additional developments. One thing that strikes me that is just so bizarre in my mind is at Five Points, where Home Depot has an entrance off and on Route 1, but Lowe's doesn't. And so you have this tremendous jam up around Five Points from Beaver Dam Road, 1D, 9404, all coming together at one. And it seems to me it would really, really help the traffic flow if Lowe's was allowed to have an entrance exit right off of Route 1. I don't know what your ability is to authorize something along those lines, but I think it's something that
should be. None whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the limit of our ability.
Yes.
None whatsoever.
Why was that not allowed?
I don't know. I don't know why it was not allowed.
It just seems so bizarre, yes, and when you go down to get your dirt or your mulch or your whatever, you know, and you have to deal with that congestion, it's insane.
I suspect that it was in order to limit access to Route 1 so that it didn't interrupt the free flow of traffic on Route 1 would be what I would surmise, but I don't know definitively why it wasn't allowed.
Right.
I believe that was correct, as I recall, with all the controversy that went on when that Lowe's was built.
And was Lowe's authorized prior to or after?
No, they were allowed to go there with the DelDOT thing.
Yeah, and it had commercial zoning, so that wasn't anything that they applied for. That there's 600 feet of commercial on either side of Route 1, so that was a permitted use there. So at that point, it was site plan approval by the county, and kind of back to the discussion with entrances. DelDOT controls the entrances onto Route 1, so that would have been a determination, probably in conjunction with everything we've talked about, plus the proximity to Five Points, so there wasn't a lot of, I guess, entrances right near that intersection. I'm not sure, but...
Yeah. Well, it's a god-awful mess.
Amen.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, then. Duly noted. Duly noted indeed. Okay, who is next? Who would like to speak? Yes, sir. Come on up.
Good morning. Dennis Winsen Reed. I'm a resident of Park Avenue, Salisbury Switch section. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I wanted to bring up was kind of coming off of some of the discussions earlier. It appears that there's a disconnect between DelDOT with various projects, communicating with the county and coordinating with the comprehensive plan. DelDOT takes a project and outlines the original, and once they get into the development stage, there's no communication back with the county as far as what's going on. In particular, Park Avenue relocation project. The original scope of the project was basically on the southern section of Park Avenue, realigning to allow for the expansion of the airport and going forward there. It turns out during the workshops that now DelDOT's plan is to expand the entire length of Park Avenue, including the northern section, widening it to effectively a four-lane road, feeding into Route 9, which now causes traffic congestion on Route 9. There's just been no communication, and talking to some of the county council people, they're not aware of the scope of the project. And my main thing is, if we're doing a comprehensive plan, why isn't DelDOT communicating when they do these projects? You put out a project that is essentially causing more problems than it's solving. There are alternatives available as far as rerouting the truck traffic without impacting the residential areas. They're just not considering it. And my main thing is, if we're putting together a comprehensive plan, it needs to be communicated back and forth, and the county needs to have more input on these projects going forward. There's no point putting money out there on a project that not only doesn't solve problems, but creates more problems than currently exists. Basically, that's it.
Well, the good news is that DelDOT is here. They're going to be here all day. So we're going to be communicating all day. Secretary Cohen will be here this afternoon to talk with us. So we are most definitely engaged with DelDOT, and probably more so than it looks like from the outside looking in. I suspect that the county is, in fact, aware of what's going on, what's happening with the Park Avenue project. It could be that the particular person you spoke with may not have been, but certainly you're entitled to an answer to your question as to why it's being done that way and why that alternative was selected over others. And I'm sure there's someone that can provide that answer for you.
I'd say, being that one of the major concerns mm-hmm. is current existing traffic on 9 and 404 and 24, mm-hmm. Basically with the beach industry and moving, dumping additional traffic and taking a four-lane into a two-lane, doesn't make sense.
As you may have gathered, there are as many opinions as there are cars on the road. So, and it's our collective job, all of us, all of you and us, to figure out, you know, what the best path forward is. And that's the whole purpose for this whole string of meetings we're having. So thanks for coming and sharing your thoughts with us. And if you can, stick around. It should be an interesting day.
I will try to.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just if I could echo your comments on that. The County Engineering Department's been working hand in hand with DelDOT on the realignment of Park Avenue. That's been something that's been under discussions and things for, frankly, years, I think, at this point. It's just sort of an evolving process with the airport expansion, the runway expansion.
Right. What
I can say from DelDOT's perspective, we have been working with the county, especially with the...
Well, if you're going to say, you need to get up here and say, okay, tell us who you are.
Drew Boyce, Director of Planning, DelDOT.
Thanks,
so
Drew.
We have a full project team that's managing the development of the project, but I was involved early on in the coordination with the county, trying to make sure that we could fit both the needs of DelDOT with the needs of the county in reference to the expansion, ultimate expansion of the airport project. And so we've been working together with FAA, with the county, and with the DelDOT project. I can say that the project is only a two-lane. It's only a two-lane road with shoulders, so it's not a four-lane. It's not a four-lane project. It has some turn lanes, obviously, to manage the traffic.
What's the size of the shoulder?
I believe it's probably 12-foot lanes, 10-foot shoulders.
So in essence, it's effectively covering the same amount of area as a four-lane road.
No. Four-lane road would be bigger.
So it's not a four-lane road. It would have to have, you know, obviously another 24 feet of pavement for it to be a four lanes without even any median protection. Typically, we would, you know, if we were building a four-lane road, it would oftentimes, depending on the function, require a median separation as well. So it's only has the capacity of a two-lane roadway.
Essentially, you've got a 50-foot right-of-way currently in the area, and you're talking about expanding it to 120-foot right-of-way.
So as...
Between roadway, right-of-way.
Right, the right-of-way serves a lot of different purposes, some of which is actually asphalt in the middle, a lot of which is room for utilities. Drainage is a huge issue that was mentioned in the opening remarks, how that is... we never used to even hardly consider stormwater management. We just had adequate flow, and that was really all we were concerned about early on. Now we have a lot of stormwater requirements that are actually causing us to expand our right-of-way needs. And we're trying to, you know, as we develop and refine the project, I would just encourage you to continue dialogue with the project team to make sure that they're heard. It's a balance of a lot of different elements. And so we try to minimize impacts in the development of any project. But understanding we're balancing that with the regulatory requirements that we're obligated to meet if we want the project to come to fruition, which I think both us and the county do want that project to happen. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Boyce. And I would encourage that you two gentlemen can continue your discussion out in the lobby. We're about out of time for public testimony. There may be a few more people that want to talk, so if you don't mind, we're going to move on. But by all means, if you guys want to continue that discussion, please do. Sounds like a lot of good information there. Anybody else like to speak? Well, okay then, you made a liar out of me. Okay. Not a problem. We will be taking public testimony at the end of our meeting. We thank those of you who spoke today for coming and to share with us, and the prepared statements are always helpful for the preparation of our minutes, so we thank you for that. And moving on, it's time for